Welcome to Popcorn for Breakfast. Today we're bringing you an exclusive look, spoiler-free, of Universal's newest picture, Monkey Man. It's got Dev Patel, it stars Dev Patel, it's written by Dev Patel, it's directed by Dev Patel, there's 1,000 Dev Patels in this movie, and we've got to talk about it. Let's pop it up.
Presented by St. Louis Area Smoothie Kings. Now, here are your hosts, Cam and Kirk.
Well, hello, hello, everyone. It's almost the weekend, and that means new movie theater movie releases.
Yes.
I'm excited.
It's great. And we're in a weird spot in the movie calendar right now, which is kind of, you could say that almost every week of the beginning of the year, because... Yes. It's just kind of weird. Like, you get big name movies and then nothing and then whatever. It's looking like the box office is going to be owned once again by Godzilla X Kong, which I will continue to call it, instead of Godzilla times Kong, because they never specified what it's called. But there are some exciting movies coming to theaters this weekend and throughout the month of April. Not necessarily the big high... the big franchise tentpoles or anything like that, but really exciting features with really exciting stories behind them. And one of them is the movie we're reviewing tonight, Monkey Man.
Monkey Man. Just a reminder, the Best Picture winner in 2 years ago, Everything Everywhere All at Once, released in like February of that year.
And it did. Being
the Best Picture. Like, no one, everyone compared every movie to that year.
And it was just kind of a snowball rolling downhill where it would get more and more releases. And yeah, so that, like, in a year like whatever that was, 2022,
yeah,
the Best Picture winner was already released. And
they won right out the gate.
Based on what we've seen so far this year, we're not there yet.
No, we're not.
Unless Monkey Man. We'll see. We'll talk about it.
Well, before we dive right in, we do have to bring in a special guest of ours. You know him as Stefano. Stefano, welcome back to Popcorn for Breakfast.
Hello, Cam and Kirk. It's great to be back. I was just here, it feels like. So
it does. It does feel like that. And that's a good thing. We have to do this as often as possible.
Wouldn't it be funny, sure, like, if you know, in this 2D environment, if you just exist in that room, Stefano? Like, you're not a real person.
It's just part of the simulation. We don't know, you know. But we did.
Proof.
That's true. We did just go to a movie with you, so that was good. It was good to confirm that.
That's true. It wasn't just a laptop in the recliner at the theater.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Stefano sat sandwiched between Cam and I, so that way we could tell him little snippets and notes about our movie as we watched it. I was
How
whispering.
Horrible would that be? We're both just whispering in his ear the whole time.
I was whispering the whole time. Stefano, are you okay with what I've done to you?
I'm fine. I was able to block you out pretty quickly.
Perfect. Perfect.
Like a true pro.
Well, we're going to get started on reviewing this movie. Again, Monkey Man, starring Dev Patel, written by Dev Patel, directed by Dev Patel. Did he produce this part of it as well?
He did. He was a producer on the film.
Incredible.
Alongside highly acclaimed producer Jordan Peele, which I think is part of the advertising for this movie is heavily centered around Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
And as the folk tale goes with this one, this movie did not have a distributor lined up, and Jordan Peele got to see the movie. Jordan Peele, of course, the acclaimed director of Get Out, Us, Nope. He got to see it, and he being someone who has his own production company, Monkey Paw, which is under the Universal umbrella, he saw this movie. He thought, this has got to be seen by people. And hopped in to be the, you know, the, like, what do they call that? Like an angel investor. He's like the angel producer who helped get this thing distributed by a major studio like Universal under his Monkey Paw Productions label. And that for me was, I was already interested in it, but now I'm like, he saw this movie and believed in it so much that he was willing to put his name and credibility on the line. So you got to see it.
What a dream. Like, what a dream scenario that is. No pun intended for the recent Nick Cage movie. I think that's pretty great. Well, let's get started. We're going to talk about all of our accolades, best acting, best supporting actor. And before we start, we're going to do it a little bit differently today because it's very clear who the best actor should be tonight. So everyone say it with me.
No.
Everyone's Oscar tonight, the best actor goes to Dev Patel. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you,
gentlemen. No, I had to stand strong on that. I know we talked pre-show on that, and I was not going to let that happen. But
you are stronger than me. I was weak. Kirk was peer pressuring me. He's holding me at gunpoint underneath the table. So it's a Han Solo situation going on over here. Closely.
All right, Stefano, since you're our guest, tell us your favorite aspects of Dev Patel's performance, the best performance of this movie.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll get us started. Dev Patel, I've always been really high in Dev Patel because he kind of can do anything. He can play a straight man very well, where he doesn't necessarily show his emotion, but he also is really good at showing his emotion when necessary. So in this, you know, his character was a bit of a mystery. You kind of just learn more about him as the movie goes along. And, you know, he's hard to read. You kind of don't know, you know, the character traits of Dev Patel's character just because of the way he plays it. And I find it to be so interesting because you don't know when he might snap. You don't know when he might make a certain decision. And I found that to be really impressive, for sure. And, you know, we saw a side of him that we've never really seen before. You know, I didn't know he had the acting chops in him, the action chops in him. So that was really impressive for sure.
Absolutely.
Cameron.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, we didn't talk much about like the nature of this movie, but it really is sort of this like neo-noir crime fighting action movie that we're getting pretty familiar with over the recent years. I mean, I think the easy comparison is obviously John Wick. They even make a John Wick reference in this movie.
They do.
Which I thought was smart. It was a nice little wink at the audience to be like, we know, you know, like we know. But also, and Dev Patel even talked about it, whenever he was doing interviews on press tour for this movie, a lot of his influence comes from a lot of these like South Korean neo-noir films that have come out over the last, let's call it 10 to 20 years, which would be things like Old Boy and the Man from Nowhere and a few others. And because of that, those characters, you know, Dev Patel himself described it as like the guy in black suit who's punching people, right? You know, we're familiar with this sort of archetype. But what I really liked, both in the writing, but especially in Dev Patel's performance, there's a really subversive nature to this film in general, where they set you up for things, thinking you're going to get something, and you get something completely different. And I think Dev Patel did a great job of that. To Stefano's point, like not showing all the cards that are in his hand, knowing that, you know, there are things yet to be revealed to the audience that will tell certain things, but also just understanding his character in such a innate way that he's able to craft it without a ton of dialogue, which I think is key in a movie like this. This archetype too is just like a very soft spoken. They're not going to say a lot of things. They're going to let their actions do the talking. And so you have to be a really good actor, you know, like an actual physical actor.
Right.
And Dev Patel is great at that. This is a guy who I just really, really like over the course. His filmography is not super long, but it seems like he's been around forever because you go back to 2008 and Slumdog Millionaire, his breakout performance. And everything he does has been so impressive. I mean, he tends to do a little bit heavier films like this one or like Slumdog Millionaire and Lion.
Yep.
And a few other heavy dramas. He was in the show The Newsroom. He also did The Green Knight, which is like a big fantasy type set piece, but it's also it's like an art house movie and it's pretty heavy in nature. So this was a different, seeing him in an action setting was a little bit different, and I think he just continues to showcase that he has a ton of skills and a ton of range.
Yeah. Other credits of his include Chappie, which I don't have any interest in
Chappie,
seeing.
Chappie, yeah.
Lion, you said, Hotel Mumbai, and also, of course, one of my favorite performances of his, The Newsroom, possibly.
Yeah, he was great in The Newsroom.
His greatest debut onto the scene, or his greatest recovery from Slumdog Millionaire. What's he going to do next? Lands in The Newsroom with Absolutely. Jeff Daniels. What I love about this is that, you know, like even if you've seen The Newsroom, if you've not, he plays like a normal guy. He's a journalist. He is eager to grow in the world. And then by the end of that series, he's like running around all over the place. Like he's not in the chair. He's like on boots on the ground and almost like an action star. That was where maybe he was like starting to bubble up. Like I need to explore more. I don't know if he just had that kind of conversation with the writers and everything. thing and was able to make that happen. But in this, you get to see him fully engaged in moving. And what's so good about that is that he is a good body mover. That sounds really weird and really strange, but let me discuss. To be an actor, to be a good actor, you also need to move your body. You need to be totally in tune with your body to know, how does my body move as this character? How can I move in relation to the camera, to the set, to the world that I'm in? And over, you just feel that he belongs in every single scene in this film. It's very easy to do when you're the director, obviously, to plant yourself up to be in the right spot, but you have to have the forethought, you have to have the storyboard ready to know that where you stand, how you move is going to be exactly what you need it to be. And the name of the game here is Monkey Man. When he's in his Monkey Man mask, as you've seen in the trailer, he fully commits to that movement. I'm a big fan of mask work, and he is very subtly moving his arms like a little monkey would, like a chimpanzee would, and the swaying and the steps he takes. It's very exciting. So Dev Patel did his homework. Bravo, sir.
Yes.
Moving on to Scene Stealer. This is thing where things get dirty. They get brutal. We punch each other in the face like all the fight scenes
sometimes.
Of this film.
Sometimes it's necessary.
Just go easy on me, please.
I'll try.
Stefano has the strongest punch. That's why we keep him in his room. Thank you, Stefano, for being away from here and not hurting us too bad.
I have a bum right shoulder, so I'll take the compliment.
Excellent. So we're going to talk about who stole the show besides Dev Patel, obviously. Stefano, kick us off.
Nice. I'll take it. Slim pickings, not because the cast wasn't great, but because, you know, it's a small main cast. And, you know, and mostly with, you know, fairly unknown actors to us and a lot of the movies we watch, with the exception of maybe a couple. But I'm going to go with Pete O'Bash here, who plays the Alfonso character. And he is, you know, kind of the, I don't want to say like the left-hand man of, but he is kind of Dev Patel's, you know, introduction into this world he enters in the movie. And he is, you know, he's reliable, but he's also this really funny, you know, element to the movie that I didn't necessarily, expect that we would get. You know, the trailer, you know, painted the picture one way. And like I think you said, Cam, earlier, there's some things that, you know, they change our expectations throughout and we don't get necessarily what we expected. So, you know, some really good comedic elements from his end, some pretty good one-liners. You know, I didn't find myself cringing the way I would in some other action movies where, you know, a Jason Statham flick that would have some really bad one-liners. So I really appreciated his presence in it. And, you know, he was kind of in a movie where there are so many people against Dev Patel's character, him being one of his main cheerleaders in it was also pretty exciting to see. So really enjoyed his performance, you know, as kind of the comedic relief, but also buddy to Dev Patel. So, yeah.
Great point. Did not expect a comedic relief to be anywhere in this film.
It's so necessary, though, mm-hmm. You know, because things can start to feel way too self-serious. And you balancing tone in a movie like this can be really hard because there's so many different forces pulling it into that serious and downward way. And it's not that you can't be that. I know a lot of people like malign films for lightening up moments that are too serious, but you can't be one note. Is really the thing. You have to have some dynamism to it. There has to be movement to it. And I think too, when you've got this, you know, I don't know about you guys. I would describe this as like noir, like a crime fighting, somewhat of a mystery, somewhat of a, I don't know, just like good versus evil, but there's ambiguity to it. When you have a film like that, where the main character makes some questionable, I mean, he's punching people, right? It's like John Wick too, like punching and shooting people and killing people. When there's moral ethical ambiguity, you have to have characters like the one that Stefano was describing, Alfonso, who show us, the audience, like, this guy's all right. You know, mm-hmm. He's like, you can have a laugh with them. And they do that in other ways too, but I think this was it was totally a necessary role to have in this movie.
And genuine laughter. Like, I didn't
feel
like...
yeah, they weren't cheap.
I should have a complimentary laugh here to appease the group mentality of the theater. No, I was like, that's funny. I'm going to laugh. you know, it got me. Cam, who's your scene stealer?
Yeah, my scene stealer, I'm going with Sabita Dhulapala, who plays Sita, who is sort of the love interest of sorts in this film. I love it because of the way that this movie is pulled together. It's a little bit, melodramatic in general, and her character being the love interest and being the source of this like tension between her and Dev Patel's character. She doesn't get a ton of dialogue. And so whenever she's, you know, being the tone of this movie being what it is and being a little bit melodramatic, she could really overdo it. And I loved the control and the restraint. She did so much talking with her eyes, but it wasn't too much. You know, she just totally understood the vision. She totally understood her role within the movie. And it's something that it seems simple. It's almost certainly not. I mean, I'm not an actor, but I can just tell you, like, I've seen movies where people mess this up, and you take a movie that's supposed to be pretty serious and heavy, and you make it a clown show because you got somebody who's doing soap opera acting with their facial expressions or something.
Yeah.
She did not fall into that trap. She turned in a really good performance and one that made you feel this relationship, even though there's not much to base it on. You know, there's not a ton of like dialogue and things like that going on, just in general and particularly with her character. So I just thought that was, you know, for an actor who doesn't have a ton of credits either, like restraint is so impressive to see from somebody like that whenever they're like, oh, this is my big movie chance. Like I gotta really go for it, but total control, total professionalism, just a really good performance.
Excellent.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Cam. And I was going to mention that, like, she says so much with her eyes. And what this movie does really well, and a lot of it comes from her character, is it does a lot of showing and not telling. I know we're always harping on that. And, you know, she's a character that's clearly in duress, but not once does she say, she actually says things that maybe go against that. But what we physically see on screen and how she's performing shows that this is somebody who might, you know, be in a hard situation that is uncomfortable to her, but she won't say it with her words, and found it to be super impressive.
No doubt.
Good job, Sita. My pick goes to a villain. I love the villains, if they're good. And this was a good villain. I will not say his name correctly, but I'm going to try. Sikander Kerr. He plays the villain Rana. I don't think you're supposed to roll the R.
I liked it though.
Okay, good. He's incredible. Like the moment you see him, you're like, that's a bad guy. Which you can talk about in a lot of films. You're like, oh, here's the bad guy. They're going to present him this way. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. And he was not showy. He was not he wasn't flamboyant in his evilness. He had a motive, and his motive was a lot of political, a lot of power, and a lot of I'm in the upper circle, the upper echelon of the people in control. And they showed that very well in this film to give us a well-structured villain. I thought I was in danger. You ever watch a movie and you realize that your heart rate is rising? You can feel like your blood all the way up into your neck and you're like, oh no. That's what I was feeling like when I was watching him on screen. I'm like, oh my gosh, he could kill me right here.
Sinister.
Yes.
He's very sinister.
Sinister is exactly right. I just felt every bit of his intentions and his tactics and his relationships with the other characters that I felt I was in danger. And that's the best thing, the best way to play a villain is to play the danger, make everyone feel that at any moment you're next. And I felt next. So bravo, Rana, you did a great job.
I love that.
And let's move on over into our showstopper. Showstopper, you can talk about many a thing. You can talk about a scene that really spoke to you. You can talk about theming throughout music. You can speak to the acting specifically, even if you wanted to. Lots of different options here. Stefano, kick us off with your showstopper.
I'm always having to go first, I guess. I'm trying to steal your guys' ideas.
Not today.
I had a couple, but I think one I wanted to touch on was, we spoke about it earlier, but the structure that Dev Patel wants to tell the story. So, you know, in a revenge movie, as some might classify this as, like, you typically would get an epilogue where you see the scenario happen where somebody dies or someone gets kidnapped or what have you. And then from there, it's very clear what the main character's intentions are. And then we go from there. But I'll say, like, the first 15, 20 minutes, like, we know that, you know, something happened to his mom based on the plot synopsis, like the widely available one. And you know that that's part of it, But there's some fuzziness in the first 15 to 20 minutes where you don't quite know exactly what is going on, like what the circumstances were and how it all unfolds. And, you know, we don't even get the full picture until towards the end of the movie. And I just love that Dev Patel gives us bits and pieces throughout, really, you know, well-executed flashbacks and a lot of, you know, leaving it up to the viewer to kind of understand that there is turmoil going on in the country. There's a tragedy that happened to his mom, and then watching it all unfold that way. It doesn't just kind of throw it at you. So I was really impressed by the way that was told and the structure of it, because it made the movie interesting throughout rather than it just being your typical epilogue. And then here's everything that happens afterwards. So that was something that jumped out to me as well. So.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is, I think that's a really good choice, as a storytelling mechanism. They put so much on the audience in this movie to say, you make a decision, you make a judgment based on the information you have. How would you react in this situation? It just really takes your mind on a trip where mm-hmm. you can just go down so many different avenues. Like, what do I think about this person? Oh, that choice was interesting. That choice is one I agree with, whatever. There's just a lot that, again, they're not telling you what you need to feel or how you need to feel. They're just giving you bits and pieces and letting you kind of piece it together, which is such a more enjoyable experience. And that's something that is just really hard in screenwriting, is to trust the audience. And I thought that they did a really good job of that in this movie, to Stefano's point.
No spoon feeding. We need a little bit of it. Like, just load the spoon, but we will take the bite. That's what we need to tell all the writers out there.
Yeah.
I'm going to get right on that. Cam, what is your scene? No, your showstopper.
Yeah. There's so many different directions I can go. I think for me, it's the way that you can tell his influences, but it doesn't feel derivative. You know, you can see the clear influences. A lot of times we see people who are new filmmakers and they go, oh, I made this movie and here's my influences, and you see it and you go, well, this is kind of a derivation of something that has already happened. Mm-hmm. Or this is something that just feels like an homage to something. But here it's clear where the influences come from. And Dev Patel's talked about it too. In the press tour, I talked about South Korean, like, neo-noir films, but also just Eastern cinema in general. Like you can see definitely some Indian film, like Bollywood type influences in this film. You can see a lot of like Japanese, or even martial arts type films, influences built into this. There's a lot packed in there, and yet it feels totally its own. It's this great, like, hodgepodge melting pot where you can see the influences and you're like, oh, I love that. I recognize how he approached that from this area or from this film. But then there's so much that's just him. So it's just this mesh where it's, you combine a bunch of familiar things and you end up with something totally unique, which I think is what new, you know, like, modern standalone film should be. That's what you want, really. Mm-hmm. And I was really impressed with that. There's so many tropes, man, where he lines you up for it and he's like, here comes this montage, or here comes whatever. And it's like, okay, but watch me spin it. Watch me do something that you're not expecting, stand it on its head. And then the one other tiny showstopper I'm going to throw in here is, I love this movie has a rhythm to it. It's percussive in nature. Like, it has a heartbeat kind of going underneath it the whole time. It's a combination of the score, the editing, the sound mixing, which I thought was really good, like the sound editing and mixing. There's some action sounds in this movie that are like so real. At one point, an axe goes into somebody's like neck, chest area, and it just makes a, that's just like so perfect. It was really impressive, but all of that together, there is just this like rhythm to it. And, I have this list on Letterboxd that I have not revealed to the public yet that I'm working
exclusive.
On. That's called like, I just called it Movies for Drummers. And I'm a drummer, and I'm like, some of these movies you'll understand why they're for drummers, like Whiplash or, you know, La La Land or whatever.
Literally drumming,
like,
movies.
Like movies
sometimes.
Where drumming is involved, but some of them, it might not be as obvious. This is going on that list.
Very cool.
I love that.
Oh, make it public right away, Cam.
I'll make it public when it's ready.
Okay.
It's not ready yet.
I'm going to pressure you every day. I'm going to text you at 5 a.m. every day.
Then you're going to get it and you're going to be like, man, this sucks.
Don't sell yourself short.
Cam, to quickly agree with one of the little tropes that you were mentioning, I know, spoiler free, but there's a little element with like a dog in the movie.
Yes.
And I did roll my eyes, but I was like, oh, here we go. Here's an added layer. But, you know, we don't quite get that. It's clearly intentional that he pulled back on that.
I know. It's great. It's really thoughtful and really clever.
All right. I guess I'm up real quick. It very much links back to Stefano, your particular showstopper, is that we are given all of these cutaways, these flashbacks of something that is critical to our main character, Dev Patel. We don't really get a name. We don't get an official name from him throughout the movie, which is always unique and mm-hmm. fun. Mm-hmm. We get all these flashbacks, and then later on in the film, they put it together. And that was one of the most well-executed uses of flashbacks. And you never quite knew, honestly, if they were going to put it all together for you. I would have been upset if they didn't, but I also would have understood if they chose not to. Like, there was a case to be had for both. And when I tell you that seeing the critical point in his life that has made him, motivated him out of fear and out of wanting to change for his entire purpose of his life and every action and choice he makes in this movie, it all came down to that full scene. And man, is it good. It's such a good sequence. It's traumatic and it's fantastically done. So that's my showstopper. I literally was just breathless in that sequence. So bravo, Dev Patel, for every aspect of that scene.
It's kind of unique too, right? Like, to have a scene that the movie is building toward, that the audience is expecting something, but they don't know exactly what it's going to be. But they're like, the anticipation is building, it's ramping up towards this one event. I mean, it's not that it's not unprecedented or anything like that, but to see that in a movie is just, it's really compelling, and it's something that is noteworthy for sure.
Mm-hmm. And if they drop the ball, the whole movie falls apart. Yeah,
exactly. It's high risk, right?
Gone. But yeah, they did it. They really did it. Okay, well, let's talk about the things that made us angry, that irritated us, things that we would have changed if we were sitting in Dev Patel's, one of his many seats in this film. We call this the director's shoes, where we're going to pick apart the movie. And guess what, Stefano? I'm coming back to you first.
All I know, I refuse to give my score first, so I'm going to
say that right now. Okay, you know what? That's fair. I respect that.
I could do that. Cam. Stefano.
I have a couple things that made me feel a little, I guess one nitpicky, one not so nitpicky. I'm going to give two smaller ones. I think, we know it was a small budget movie. There were so many constraints to making it. They had, they literally ran out of money. They were talking about, I read where Dev Patel was saying that for some of the breakaway tables, that once they broke a wooden table, they literally cut the scene and they had to pick up the pieces to put it back together because they didn't have the funds to keep buying breakaway tables. So same with the setting, you know, they kind of made it in a bubble because they filmed this years ago, like after lockdown, during lockdown. But one thing that I noticed that kind of threw me around a bit was the changing of settings. So we kind of have like three major settings, sort of. We have like our flashback setting, we have like a temple, we have, you know, downtown, and then the building that the movie takes place in. And what's kind of hard to tell based on some of the jumping around is like how far away some of these places are, because there are things that happen pretty quickly between, let's say, the downtown and the temple area, which makes it seem like they're a 10 second walk from each other. But it was a bit discombobulating when that happened because we had back-to-back scenes, and it kind of goes along with hard to tell how much time has passed. So it, you know, in that middle section, you know, it was a bit me trying to figure out where we're at and how, you know, we're going to get back to where we need to be. But again, it's a bit nitpicky, but you know, it has to do with that, the structure and that, the way that was put together. And then one small tiny nitpick is, so I loved the score, the sound design and all of that, but an element of the music I didn't like were some of the like non-diegetic song choices in the movie. It was like up front, there were some like kind of like, there were some songs like with lyrics that kind of took me out of the movie a bit, kind of like slightly cringy choices, I would say, that didn't really fit with the vibe of the movie. Because then once you hit the temple scene in the middle of the movie and on, there's more score involved, but there really wasn't much score involved on the front end. So I think it was, I forget the Charlize Theron movie, The Old Guard.
Yes.
Yeah.
That movie is full of non-diegetic, lyric-based songs, and it's just so cringy. It was nowhere near that, but it was just, it seemed like an odd choice in it. But
yeah,
that's all I got to say there.
That's a major, like, you find that in Netflix movies, like Netflix yes. studio movies, because it's like...
And this was supposed to be a Netflix movie, and right. then it was just kind of
shelved. The producers are like, "I got an idea."
Let's yeah, because it's in. Like it's almost like movie by algorithm sometimes, yes. and so they're like, "Let's throw in these songs," you right. know.
Stefano, just because I think I know what you're saying by context clues, but I've never heard the term itself. Can you define non-diegetic?
Diegetic. Yeah. Yes. So diegetic would be like songs or music that are physically taking place in the scene. So like the characters hear the music. So then non-diegetic would be just music that's played over it. So there are a couple of like diegetic songs in it. Like I think in like the upper levels of the building and stuff.
And the club,
so
yeah.
So
perfect.
So, yeah.
And can you spell it for us for the listeners, please?
And what's the country of origin?
I won my middle school spelling bee.
I bet you did. That's awesome.
Yeah, just so you all know. I'm not gonna spell that for you.
I came in third because there was a big deal that happened, and I don't want to talk about it.
I know. I think almost everybody who went through the public school system has been traumatized by a spelling bee at one point or another in their life. I'm definitely right there with you.
Yeah, my English teacher at the time was one of the judges, so I think she threw me a couple softballs.
She threw a couple bones, yeah.
That's pretty nice. There was some cheating happened by the most popular girl. I'll talk about it.
Name names, Kirk. Let's go.
The word was crestfallen.
Oh, yeah.
Which, easy.
Easy, right?
Easy. She spelled crestfalling, which is not a word.
No.
And they let her try again.
Oh, my gosh.
And then my next word.
The injustice.
I misspelled. Do you want to know what the word was?
Tweezers.
Thesaurus.
It was villain. It was
villain.
Because I was in fifth grade and I thought the A became before the A.
I know.
Villain is a rule breaker, ladies and gents.
Wow.
And that's why you love villains in movies. Makes sense.
That's right.
It all comes back.
That's right. That's right.
That was the beginning of Kirk's villain arc.
That's right.
As it turns out.
Well, thank you for giving us that. We always love little tidbits and we always love to sprinkle in some... some stories about
some
our
humanity.
Traumatic past, and of course the non-diegetic. We will spell it later on this week on social. Cam, your turn.
For me, I will try to keep it short. You find this with first time directors a lot. Self indulgence happens, you know, and this movie had a little bit of self indulgence where it's like you could tell that some of these shots were just in Dev Patel's dream journal. And he just had to make it happen. Or some of these sequences he just had to draw out because he wanted it to look and feel a certain way. And there's nothing necessarily wrong about that. In a lot of ways, like that's how directors get their voice, and that's, you know, what we love is the little imperfections that make it their movie. And in a lot of cases in this movie, that's what it is. It's like, oh man, I kind of like that he lingered a little bit here. That's different, you know, it's a different feel. But there are some choices where it's like this sequence. Probably not necessary, you know, even like micro sequences. It's like, we didn't need to stay here on this shot in this setting for this period of time. There's just a little bit of moments and it messes with the flow a little bit, particularly because you're going like in this movie, you're like going high octane, like unbelievably high octane action sequences. And then you're slamming on the brakes. So those little, like momentum killers and sequences that feel a little bit long in the tooth, it matters. It adds up. Mm-hmm. So that would be mine.
Beautiful. My director's shoes would have to be, speaking of villains, I think there's too many in this film. There's a fork in the road that Dev Patel gets to cross and to choose, if you will. And it feels like he races down one path and then throws it in reverse, backs up the path, and then turns and goes down the other path as well, which you could speak to that. There's reasons for that, but I don't feel like we needed to go down both paths. I would have rather he chose even his own road or just one of the roads. So all of that metaphorical speaking, I just think that there were too many additional plot lines that were not needed because the story was strong enough to choose one route and stay there. That is my director's shoes.
I love it.
We move on to final thoughts and score. I have been instructed upon threat of death. If I ask,
I've just
Stefano,
been passed a note.
You're sitting on a bomb. If you choose to say the wrong words,
ejectocito,
it will be activated. So we will not go with Stefano first. We're going to go with Cam first.
Yeah,
I'll go first. Your final thoughts and score?
I have to say, I think this is a remarkably impressive directorial debut for Dev Patel, and I think that there's just a ton to like about this movie. I think you go into it just expecting something, and you get like, if you're looking for that, you're satisfied. But it's also it's different. It's its own. He goes about it in a different way from a story perspective, from the way that they, how they handle the character archetypes and things like that. There's just a lot that's in here that's different. And as somebody who watches a ton of movies, it's refreshing to see somebody who has a fresh perspective on the genre and just on this story. It's just a very unique thing. I love the theming. I think the theming is strong throughout. I love the tie back, which is set forth in the very beginning and also in the title of the movie, to the Runamon story, the Hindu folktale of the monkey man deity. Mm-hmm. It's really compelling. There's just it's something that's, it just feels like so, it feels like such a Dev Patel movie. You know, the more you read about him, it just feels like this is obviously a passion project, and I feel like his clarity of vision was so precise. He really understood what he wanted to get across, and I think he made the movie he wanted to make, which is really impressive for somebody who's doing their first movie, who had all the, you know, Stefano alluded to it, who had all the headwinds that they had making this movie. I mean, the dude broke his hand. He got injured a bunch of times. Like, some of these shots he was shooting on his iPhone because they had a camera that was broken. Like, mm-hmm. Crazy stories from the production of this movie, which makes it sort of a folktale all its own. It's not perfect. And I think that there's a little bit of self-indulgence here and there. There's a little bit of inexperience with some stuff. I think use of the shaky cam was probably too much at times and feels very frenetic at times when you would prefer it not feel as frenetic. But I think overall, I mean, this is like, to me, this is probably a classic action film in the making from mm-hmm. our era. And I think that it's going to be one that is beloved by fans of the genre and by fans of film. And I think it's going to, I mean, I think people are really going to like it. So I debated how high I go with it because, I mean, like we've talked about it. There's some things, but it's just a very endearing film with just a lot of heart and soul and all the things you want, grit, blood, sweat, tears behind it. I'm giving it a 9.1 out of 10.
9.1.
Yeah, I decided to go into the nines. So
wow, in the there nine you have category. It. We need like a buzzer, like ding, 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 like we hit a nine.
Da-da-da-da. It's like Price is Right.
That's fantastic. I love what you said about the shaky cam. It does go a little too hard at times. In fact,
like I think I'm physically shaking, actually.
Maybe think of like 24, the show with Kiefer Sutherland, you know, Mr. President, you need to get out of the city. Like, that's what it was.
Okay,
really
at one point during our screening, we had a little bit of conversation about this afterwards.
Oh no.
A dude stood up and stepped, he was like in the upper section of the theater and stepped away and kind of stood back and watched. And then later in the movie, moved back and sat right next to Kirk.
Oh yeah.
My theory is that the shaky cam was doing him in.
I didn't see this man.
He was getting wrecked by the shaky cam.
Stefano and Cam, you both saw this guy. You saw my trouble coming from a mile away. I was engrossed in the film.
That guy was trouble.
I had my popcorn in the seat next to me. He stands right next to Cam because Cam's on the aisle, and he's like pointing at my popcorn bucket. I'm like, are you going to murder me? Like, what are you trying to do here? And sure enough, he sat next to me.
I think he was about to hurl. I really do. I think he was looking up and there was the shaky cam. I don't think he could handle it.
We've lost Stefano. He can't contain himself.
That's too good. With the shaky cam, before we move on.
Yeah.
Something I did like about it was it almost reminded me of like a Saw movie. In Saw, they use a lot of this like hyper shaky cam. And there were some other horror elements in it. There was even, during one of the sequences, there was even like a, it seemed like a pretty heavy metal song that was playing for a bit. And
yes.
That's like something you would get out of a movie like Saw. So that was kind of exciting to see. But yeah, it was a lot, but I think some of it was pretty interesting.
Even like Safdie Brothers. Yeah. You know, like I think of Good Time. Like uh-huh. Just the anxiety inducing, you know, they try to make you feel claustrophobic, get your heart mm-hmm. rate going, and it's effective for that. in short bursts, I think, though.
Yeah. Captain Phillips is notorious for that,
man,
too.
Oh, man, yes.
Oh, man, you feel like you're on that stinking boat,
you feel like
boat,
you're in
man.
The ocean. You're seasick afterwards.
So much anxiety. Well, Stefano, I didn't get a letter in between. Like, are you allowed to go next, or do you want to go last? How are you feeling?
I'm going last.
Nice.
Okay, cool. All right. I'm not going to make any sudden movements.
Live your truth.
Here for the bomb under my chair. This movie, it's hard because I feel emotionally invested in Dev Patel's success because he's not a household name, but he should be. Like, it blows my mind that he's not. We have creative cinematography, charming shots, exciting action, romantic shots at times. You cannot fault this camera work. You cannot fault the vision. The story is where it gets just the tiniest bit messy for me. But out of all of that together, you just feel good about where this movie ends up. It's kind of like, you know, I feel like the movie Coda, Best Picture winner, is pretty polarizing to some, but you know that when you see that movie, it evokes emotion in you. And so do very different movies.
This is why you listen to our podcast, because this is the only place where you're going to get a Coda Monkey Man comparison.
That's right.
It's the only place, trust me.
And what you are immediately immersed emotionally. I feel like in the first 3 minutes of this movie, I was like, all right, I'm in. Like, mm-hmm. I'm feeling things I didn't expect to feel. I'm not dissociating with being in the theater and the strange man that's sitting next to me. So all of those things together, I'm torn because I did really hate the extra stuff in this, but I'm going to go high and I'm going to give this a 7.4 out of 10.
Wow.
Pearls.
That's high?
That's high for me. I had a different score written down earlier.
Uh-huh.
And it's like climbed. You guys have shown me that I was being a little too harsh on it.
I had a score in mind, and mine also bumped up based on conversation.
Yeah,
you're welcome. That was me.
That's great. That's all I can.
I've been paid by the producers of Monkey Man. I'm actually
they sneaked him a T-shirt.
That's right. So. I'm a total plant.
Take off your mask. It's actually Dev Patel in the studio with us, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh man, I wish I looked like Dev Patel. He's a heartthrob.
All right, Stefano, close us out. Final thoughts and score on Monkey Man.
Yes. I echo everything you all said, the positives, I guess some of the negatives, but I don't think there are many. Like I said, my few things were kind of nitpicky. But I will say some of the other things I really liked about it was, you know, it was bigger than just a revenge movie. There was like this entire social commentary throughout it that, you know, didn't feel ham-fisted. It was totally relevant to the setting, to the character. And like you were saying, Cam, with Dev Patel putting his mark on it, this is basically only a movie Dev Patel can make.
Yes.
And I loved it so much because of that. You know, no one else would be able to put this together the way he did. Something else I loved is obviously talked about it to death with comparing it to other action movies. What I loved about it so much was it didn't rely on guns at all. If anything, there were very intentional moments with guns that kind of dampen the mood or were used by somebody we don't want to be, you know, winning a fight or something. Dev Patel gets a gun in the movie, but how useful is it? You know, that's for you to find out. But, you know, most of the action is just with fists, with pointy objects and other things. And I
found
that
objects.
Really impressive. Like, you know, he wasn't made out to be like an automatic, you know, Navy SEAL who's just really good at, shooting weapons and fighting. He has to kind of earn that. And that was part of the fun in watching it. So really enjoyed it for all those reasons. So I'm going to go 8.2 on this one.
8.2. Wow. I'm the high man.
You're the high man.
The high man. But it's a nice level. Nice.
Good distribution. Stones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. Maybe my perspective was skewed.
As soon as that guy said next to you, it lost at least a full point. At least.
Kirk's, you know, all fun and games and nice and all, but he's a harsh critic. Like sometimes I'll read his Letterboxd review, like his reviews, and I'll read it. And I was like, oh, he's really high on this. Oh, 6.1.
Okay. Yeah, I know. It's crazy. He'll be like, this is so-and-so's best movie, 5.2. I'm like, dang.
Just like Dev Patel just pulls the rug out from under you.
I respect the heck out of it. I'm apparently a big softy.
No, not at all. Not at all. Like what you like. That's why we're here. If you liked this movie or if you're excited about this movie, tell us about it. If you couldn't care less about this movie, tell us about it. We always accept constructive criticism here on the podcast. If we don't accept jerks around here, so see yourselves out.
Though I really liked the person on TikTok one time who called this couch potato movie review. That was one of my favorites because I identify as a couch potato. And so I was like, that's actually pretty dope. Doesn't really roll off the tongue, but the sentiment is, I really like that.
If you're going to call us a name, like, get really creative with it. Come on. Yeah. Give us something we could use.
And then people started commenting potato emojis underneath it. And I really liked that. It was kind of like a community thing.
They were good. The clever ones.
It's incredible.
Stefano, anything else you want to chat about? You can catch Stefano's blogs on our page all the time. They're recently revamped site to see all of our fun stuff. But Stefano, anything you want to chat about? Something you're seeing? Something that's coming up for you?
Yeah, quickly. First of all, great job updating the website, Cam. It looks phenomenal. Everybody go check it out and read everything that's on there. Quick plug for Late Night with the Devil. Saw that, absolutely loved it. So I can't recommend it enough. Ignore all those people that are telling you to not see it for certain reasons I'm not going to mention. I also checked out Immaculate, the Sydney Sweeney horror movie. The one that, what was so awesome about that, talking about the making of this movie, is, you know, she was casted in this movie like a decade ago. Movie got totally dropped, but she was so interested in the character and the story, she picked it back up all this time later as a producer.
That's awesome.
And got the movie made. And the movie was, you know, pretty awesome. Like, it wasn't amazing. You know, there's some elements of it that aren't great, but mostly it was really enjoyable and she does a really good job in it. So Immaculate was pretty solid as well. And yeah, I think that's it. Civil War next week, though. Can't wait for that.
Yes, that's a big one. That's a big one.
Jinx. You can't talk anymore. Cutting off your mic.
I'm like panicking because I don't know when I'm going to see it because I've got some travel coming up and stuff. And I'm like, I gotta see it because the social media buzz is going to be so loud. It already is.
We've got an idea for you. Okay, you're going to fake sick in one of your meetings.
Yeah.
And you're just going to go straight to the movies.
Good. Yes.
They'll have no idea.
No idea. Hopefully they don't listen to this. I mean,
uh-oh.
No, that might be the foiled again.
I guarantee you they're not one of our four listeners.
That's right. That's probably true. It's me, you, Kirk, and then my mom.
Oh, man. Well, thank you all so, so much for joining us on this adventure. We hope that you get a chance to go to the movie theaters and see something you like. If Monkey Man interests you, you've got our pretty high praises of it. And tell us what you think as well. We'll catch you next time. Don't forget to drink those smoothies from Smoothie King. Don't forget to thank everyone around you at all times. I'm just trying to be kind and spread kindness at this point. So we appreciate you all. Listen, subscribe, like, comment. We'll talk to you next time.